Radio Influence. The future is now.
You're listening to Crush Performance with the Crusher, Jeff Crushell. Get in on the talent grid and follow him on Twitter at Jeff Crush. Now, here he is, the Crusher.
Introducing the world's heavyweight champion, the Crusher!
And welcome to Crush Performance, everybody. I am Jeff Crushell. We are your weekly source for sport performance and athletic development information. And today, a pure performance conversation with Dr. Charles Samuels from the Center for Sleep in Calgary, Alberta, as we look at one of the most important factors in performance and recovery, and that is sleep. When we look at our hierarchy of performance factors, rest and recovery is number one. And inside of that, sleep reigns supreme. Without adequate and quality sleep, nothing else matters. So inside of our number one priority, rest and recovery, sleep reigns supreme. After that, we look at nutrition as being the number two factor for overall performance. Then, number three is posture. Posture is your setup, and if your setup is off, you're done before you even start. So we look at muscular balance, we look at skeletal alignment, we look at range of motion around the joints, and we look at some of the function that goes along with that. You have to have a good setup if you're going to be successful in sport. And that's all to get you ready for maybe the most important priority when it comes to performance outcomes, and that's the number four priority, which is movement. When it comes to sport outcomes, movement is what it's truly all about. Listen, if you're not a good mover, you cannot be successful in sport. You know, one of the biggest mistakes we see at every single level of sport, the development side for sure, especially when young athletes are getting to that point where they're getting into the transition from, you know, amateur sport into the college ranks, national team ranks, or certainly the professional ranks, we see the big mistake of the rush into the weight room, the rush to get big, the rush to get huge and strong. Listen, the only reason we send athletes to the weight room is to help them become better movers, better functional movers. If we send an athlete to the weight room, I don't care if we're talking about MVPs, world-class Olympic gold medal champions, or if we're talking about developing athletes, if we send them to the weight room with the idea of getting bigger and stronger before they're really good movers, guess what you have? You have a big, strong athlete that can't move. So listen to me carefully. When it comes to the sport outcome side of our priority scale, movement is king, and you have to be a quality good mover. That's what separates the great athletes from the not so great athletes, getting it done. So that's a breakdown of the priorities when it comes to athlete performance in our model, which has been incredibly successful across the board in every single sport you can imagine. Don't get me wrong, there's other priorities that come along, but these are the top four if you're going to start out and build a championship athlete or even organization. And again, at the top of this hierarchy is rest and recovery, and inside of that is sleep. And today we will talk with one of the world experts on sleep science and sport performance and human performance for that matter, Dr. Charles Samuels from the Center for Sleep and Human Performance in Calgary, Alberta. Stay tuned for this fantastic conversation. It applies to everything you do, and we cover it on Crush Performance right after this.
Radio Influence strives to bring you the best in digital media broadcasting. We've got something for everybody. National sports radio talents such as the fabulous Sports Babe and Rich Herrera. Huge podcasts like the Don Tony and Kevin Castle Show. And the MMA Insiders with Jason Floyd and Sam Kaplan. New shows like Beyond the Badge with Vincent Hill. Entertainment shows like LOL with Nancy Alexander. And shows that'll make you think like Dangerous Conversation with Scott Ledger.
We've got you covered.
You can find all our shows on iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, and RadioInfluence.com.
Crush Performance, your weekly source for sport performance and athletic development information. If you're a serious athlete, a weekend warrior, parent, or coach, join us each week as we investigate the latest trends and research coming out of the sport performance world. We'll visit with top athletes, coaches, and sports scientists to keep you on the cutting edge and to find out what it truly takes to achieve human maximum performance. You can visit us online at crushperformance.com, and Crush Performance Radio with me, Jeff Kershaw, can be found on iTunes, Stitcher, and at Radio Influence.
Find out what it takes to be a top performer. Get the Crush blog, podcast, and newsletter at crushperformance.com. Now, back to the show.
And welcome back to Crush Performance. Jeff Kershaw here, the con man behind the glass, keeping us on track. Hey, if you want to get in touch with us, questions, comments, or smart remark, please do so. It's crushperformance.com. The blogs, our podcasts, and you can also sign up for our weekly newsletter where we connect you with the world of sport performance. Hey, the text question of the day. What do you think is more important to overall development? Your genes or the environment you're in? And the environment maybe we create for our athletes and our performers. Let us know. It's 10-12-60. We'll be picking somebody from the text pool to get an oil change from Sherwood Dodge Chrysler Jeep. Couple texts coming in. Here's a good one. We always got these guys who listen to the radio, right? I can't believe this fast-talking snake oil salesman make enough to pay for his infomercial. Pathetic radio. All right, well, there's an intelligent comment from one of our listeners. Not too interested in performance, obviously, and that's okay. There's some other great texts here, so get in. Trevor, thanks for yours. We'll get to those later on. But right now, I want to get to what I think might be one of the more important conversations we can have out there, and that's about sleep and sleep science. We're joined right now by Dr. Charles Samuels from he's the medical director from the Center for Sleep and Human Performance in Calgary. Dr. Samuels, thanks for joining the show today.
My pleasure, Jeff.
Well, we know this is an important conversation, and it goes well beyond sport. Our listeners and our passion, of course, is helping athletes perform. Maybe tell us a bit about the Center for Sleep and Human Performance down there in Calgary and some of the great work you guys are doing, just to sort of set it up for our listeners.
Sure. So I started the center in about 2005, and this was following about 10 years of training in sleep medicine and with a focus in research. And the research was related originally to the health and human performance of law enforcement officers in a shift work environment. And so we spent 10 years working with the Calgary Police Service and other law enforcement agencies, and I was in a collaboration with the Washington State University in Spokane and Harvard and a few other universities working specifically with law enforcement. And then I started working with the Canadian Olympic teams in around the sort of mid to late 2000 up to 2010 for the purpose of getting to the 2010 Olympics. That's where I was engaged by the sports science community. So at the center, we do all of sleep medicine and have a sleep lab and use different forms of technology and diagnosing sleep disorders, and have a group of doctors working with me there. And I also have a research group as well. And my postdoctoral researcher right now is working with the Olympic teams, looking specifically at sleep in elite athletes and the relationship of sleep to recovery.
We're talking with Dr. Charles Samuels, the medical director for the Center for Sleep and Human Performance in Calgary. Well, Dr. Samuels, in our hierarchy, in terms of the priorities for athlete development, we have rest and recovery as our number one sort of focus when we build a program and start planning performance. And inside of that, sleep is by and far our number one priority. And then we go down the scale and we talk about nutrition, and then we talk about posture and setup and range of motion and functional movement. And then we get into the real guts of what performance is all about, and that's movement. And so I think that just goes to show how important I think the industry is now seeing sleep and rest and recovery. But do we really have a great understanding of the impact of sleep and how it really works in the human body?
In general or with sports in particular?
I think if we talked about in general to start with, because this goes well beyond sport. I mean, the implications in sport are definitely there, and it's fun to talk about. But I think in general, maybe it's just a conceptual conversation.
Sure.
Do we have a lot yet to learn, or do you think we're pretty accomplished in our knowledge of in the role of sleep?
Well, you're asking a researcher, so we're always going to say we don't know.
Right.
So, but we do actually, in general, know a great deal. In my 20 years, we have come a long, long way in understanding the role of sleep in health, and human performance in a general perspective. And clearly, if we just look at human performance from a cognitive perspective, not a physical perspective, the brain does not like sleep debt and disturbed sleep. So those two factors, and it doesn't like working out of sync in a circadian perspective. So in other words, shift work or jet lag, if the body is or the brain is chronically exposed to those disturbances, it changes mood, attention, memory, and of course, interaction and performance.
And if we look in the sport performance world, there's also injury implications. Of course, we can probably understand the performance implications in terms of learning, mm-hmm. and especially when, I guess, when we're talking about the developmental levels in terms of skill sets, but
very
also
important.
In terms of anticipation and reaction time and everything that goes into, you know, not just, you know, increasing performance, but decreasing risk of injury.
Yeah, and so you can all you can pin that down to one concept in sports science, which is focus.
Right.
And so there are many, many, many things cognitively that feed into an athlete's focus or a police officer's focus when they're managing an environment and they may have to shoot or it's deadly force or whatever. And these are very similar situations because they draw on the same cognitive requirements to maintain attention. And so there are many different things that go on. If our attention is impaired, we have compensatory mechanisms to maintain a certain level, but there is a threshold. And so we look at the way we investigate these things in sports, in sleep science, is to restrict sleep. So we just take less and less and less sleep. In the lab setting, we'll give the person, you know, maybe 4 hours instead of eight. And then we start looking at very specific metrics that will change over time. And it might be just one night of sleep debt. So you can see decrements in performance even in one night of 1 to 2 hours of sleep debt. But of course, those things can be compensated for in real life. Whereas if you start taking 4 hours away for 7 nights in a row, you're going to see substantial changes in performance.
Hi, isn't that interesting? We're talking with Dr. Charles Samuels, the medical director for the Center for Sleep and Human Performance in Calgary. Well, if I were to ask you, you know, I think it's pretty interesting that you sort of started your work looking at shift work and the implications there, because, you know, I had a chance, you know, before I went to university to work in the sawmills, and I was on the graveyard shift, and I went to the day shift, and we actually had a bunch of people coming in, you know, for workplace safety, come in and talk about our sleep patterns and how to handle it. It's a tough gig, you know, especially when you're jumping all over the mat in terms of changing shifts.
Yeah, no, it's very hard on the body. And I mean, you know, in Alberta, you know, we have a shift work environment because of the oil patch and whatnot. So I deal a lot with different industries. I've just finished doing some work with CP Rail around these issues of extended work hours and shifting, because there are many different situations. Healthcare has different implications. I have one of my graduate students is doing work just looking at sleep and burnout in primary care physicians in Alberta. So we're looking at these things. I'm not saying there's a problem, but we're looking to see if there's a relationship because we know that physicians experience burnout to a certain extent.
Well, it seems like almost a new concept for some reason. In the world of sport, it's really, really gained some ground in terms of popularity. And now there's strategies for sleep and really elaborate, you know, programming. And I think it's fantastic. If we go back to your work with the Olympic team leading up to Vancouver, and again, I'm not going to hold you to this, but if you were to put an impact number on the performance and the role that sleep can have in overall performance, would you be comfortable throwing a number at it saying, look, it's worth this much of a percent of overall performance?
Yeah, so I'm not a salesman. I'm the one who always stands up in front of a group and says, you know, I'm not here to sell you sleep. But so I actually wouldn't do that. I could give you examples of where there were benefits and where athletes have come to us and said, you know, if it wasn't for that, I wouldn't have performed as well. And our work in Sochi, so we were starting the program leading into 2010, just beginning it. And keep in mind, we didn't travel. So it was Beijing where we really provided the most help, because we have a whole separate program that just does travel management for all of the teams. And we're actually being requested around the world to provide travel management for professional teams. We just got a request from an Australian rules football team. So we have pretty extensive experience in managing travel and the implications of travel fatigue and jet lag on athletic performance that we do, and that's separate from just looking at sleep and recovery. So for Vancouver, you know, there wasn't a lot of travel involved. The athletes were local. They were staged in Vancouver long before the games start, you know, so it wasn't a big deal there. So it was really the years leading up trying to detect whether there were athletes who had problems that weren't being addressed. And that's what our actual research is actually doing. We're actually trying to screen all of the Olympic team athletes for sleep disturbance because of what your opening statement, that we see sleep as the sort of foundation of recovery. There are many other things that go on, but if they're not getting the sleep that they need, the quality and the amount, then it's just going to undermine everything that we do, whether it's cold water baths or massage or whatever we're doing for the athletes. So we really want to focus on getting them that base of recovery. And we believe that that just the education has had a huge impact on the teams, or we wouldn't continue to get funding from the Olympic teams. You know, that's the way I measure things. If we weren't doing something good, OTP would not fund us. And we're amongst, there's only 10 researchers in the country that are funded by OTP. So that speaks to itself. As far as Sochi goes, my research assistant who does all of the travel planning now worked with all four gold medal teams, curling and hockey, and she was given a tremendous amount of credit for the work that she did in helping the teams, because that travel was brutal for the teams. There's no worse travel in the world.
Right.
Yeah.
So, we're talking with Dr. Charles Samuels, the medical director for the Center for Sleep and Performance in Calgary. Well, here's an interesting conversation. You know, we at the top of the show, we talked about how fantastic the sporting landscape is right now. We have, of course, Major League Baseball playoffs. The NHL is well underway. Yeah. NFL. We've got NHL. Yeah. NBA is kicking off. All the college and university programs are well underway. Here is, I guess, one of the most challenging things. And again, I was the strength coach for the Toronto Blue Jays for a number of years. And I'm telling you right now, managing the East Coast, West Coast swings was incredibly challenging. And I don't think, you know, unless you really live that life where you're back and forth, sometimes East Coast to West Coast three times inside of 20 days, you don't really understand what a toll it takes on the athletes. So when you talk about something like going to the Olympics, to a big event like that, there was discussions 2 years ago about the teams going to the Super Bowl and whether they should get there early and get acclimatized or just show up the day before and compete. When it comes to time zones and managing that, Dr. Samuels, what's your sort of research say on that?
Well, so it's complex, and so what I would do is distinguish between international travel, which is multi-time zone, versus within North America or, you know, within Australia or whatever continent you're on.
Right.
So if it's intracontinental, then really it's a different story of more high-frequency travel across not that many time zones. Although, if you're going coast to coast in North America, you do start to hit the zone where you could introduce jet lag factors. So your experience, Toronto to West Coast, isn't the same as, like, you know, Newfoundland to West Coast.
Right.
That would be really hard repeatedly, and that's what we see in pilots, for instance, and flight staff for the airlines. So when we look at the teams that are professional teams in North America, we look at high frequency travel. And so the problem with giving the example of the Super Bowl is really it's an event that the teams have time to prepare for. Whereas if you're a hockey team playing 80 games in a season and then your playoff season is just brutal, that's when you start to look at the really long-term effects of travel fatigue, separate from jet lag.
Right.
And as a strength and conditioning coach, you guys see the worst of it. You and the physiotherapy people and support staff, because you actually see the athletes really struggling with these things. And the problem we see medically is the abuse of sedative hypnotics and then stimulant medication is pretty serious.
Oh, and there is a vicious cycle right there. We're talking with Dr. Charles Samuels, the medical director for the Center for Sleep and Human Performance. Dwayne asks, does your guest work with hockey teams? Has he worked with the Oilers yet with their travel schedule? Well, I don't know if you work with the Oilers, but we know you do work in professional hockey, and that's why we were so interested in talking to you today. But this is a battle of the ages for professional sports, and not just inside of professional sports, at every single level. Dr. Samuels, I want to get into this, because this is a very important discussion, important on many different levels, the use of over-the-counter and prescription sleep aids, and then on the other side, the stimulants to get back up again. This can be a deadly vicious cycle, can it not?
Yeah, and it is, and it's a concerning thing. You know, if you're talking to me, it's something I really want to talk about, and, you know, we have to all be honest. Tremendous amount has been written. You know, there are now lots of, you know, W5 and 60 Minutes are doing all of these things on football and hockey, and it comes about because guys are dying because they're committing suicide or other things are happening, and it's sad. And the drug abuse situation in professional sport is very serious. It's driven by many factors, some of which may be, you know, true mental illness, but other is just that you take a normal person, and this is what we see in shift workers. You can take a completely normal person, stick them into shift work, and you can make them fat and depressed in a very short period of time.
Right.
Because of the nature of the work. And there's a host of physiological reasons and scientific evidence that supports that. So in sport, what happens is you have high performance individuals, as we do in law enforcement, where really they need to come down fast after games so that they can get some rest. And then they need to come back up for the games, and they're all running on a chronic sleep debt and circadian disturbance because of coast-to-coast travel, for instance. And so the problem there is they just accumulate debt over the course of the season. They never recover it, and the ones that aren't smart. Now, the smart athletes, the smart hockey players, you talk to them, they have systems, and they are very sophisticated at making sure they get all the sleep that they need. But, you know, the young kids that don't know any better are just going to have fun in between games and whatnot. And their life is an unusual life, right? Like, they don't have a lot going on except for games and practice. And so it's difficult. And so with the younger teams, so we working with the professional teams is a bit harder because you're dealing with very high-paid athletes who don't necessarily want to do what you're suggesting. So working with the younger athletes as they're coming up through the system in the feeding teams helps to change the culture within the sport, because in hockey, and for instance, the culture is a very difficult culture to break through.
It is, and you need every advantage possible.
Yeah.
So that being said, so we have, what would be your advice for people who might be, you know, using the over-the-counter sleep aids just because they can't get a good night's sleep, and then they're slamming the coffee and maybe who knows what they're using during the days. What would you suggest? What would be, I guess, sort of a real, not a quick fix, but some real sound advice at this point?
No, there is very clear sound advice. If you are going to the cabinet, going to the pharmacy to buy something to sleep, go to your doctor, because there's a problem.
Right.
And that's the problem, is that people are treating it like getting Advil for a headache. That's not the same. The drugs that you get in the pharmacy, over the counter, even in the health food store, are not good for you. And I'm the chairman of the National Committee for the Treatment of Insomnia in Canada. And we do not recommend the use of over-counter sleep aids under any circumstances for anyone, because the compounds in them are more dangerous than actually getting the help that you need, either from your family physician or your primary care provider, and getting directed into the right place to get the resources. So we believe treating the sleep disturbance that people are going to the cabinet and to the drugstore is behavioral. So there are many sophisticated behavioral techniques that can be used, and drugs aren't needed. If drugs are needed, you should be seeing your doctor and getting proper medication, because the idea that, the prescription is worse is absolutely not true. And again, I have no vested interest in this, but, you know, I mean, I set the standards. I sit on a committee that sets standards and guidelines for these things, and we strenuously discourage the use. Certainly melatonin is completely useless as a sleep aid, except under very specific conditions. in jet lag and shift work. So it's really important to get good information out to people that they should get help, not try and just do this on their own. Using Gravol for sleep is not really a good way to go. And then the idea, so we, and then when you look at the stimulant side, so we work with the athletes, and I think you'd ask me a question too about napping. We're very strategic in teaching them how to manage sleep debt, where they catch up their sleep with strategic naps that have to be timed at certain times in the circadian cycle. And then we add in caffeine, again, strategically, not, you know, indiscriminately, like drinking a pot of coffee, because then it doesn't work. So we're very careful, and we have very specific instructions for the athletes of how to do their core sleep, which is at night, and then their napping catch-up sleep. And there may be sleeping in time as well, like on weekends or whatever, depending on the athlete's schedule. And then also using naps with caffeine appropriately so that they can have peak performance when they're out of their nap, for instance.
Well, there is some sound advice. A shot across the bow from Dr. Charles Samuels on sleep aids. Absolutely love it.
Yeah.
Dr. Samuels is the medical director for the Center for Sleep and Human Performance in Calgary. Fantastic stuff. You know, and I love the idea of, you know, just managing naps, mandatory naps for all of our athletes. But I also am very interested, and maybe this is a conversation for another day, of combining the caffeine with the naps for performance.
Yeah.
That's something that we've talked about before. We just had a text come in asking about relaxation techniques and self-hypnosis. There's a lot of things you can do out there that can help you get a good night's sleep.
Yeah, so actually I would direct people, do we feed information back to people? Because this is a really good resource.
Absolutely, there's no question.
So they can Google a basically insomnia, online insomnia programs, and there's three that are really good. One is called Shut Eye, and the other one is called Sleep Ego. And the Canadian Sleep, there's another one, I can't remember the name of it. But those two that I mentioned, Shut Eye, which is S-H-U-T-I, and Sleep as in S-L-E-E-P-I-O, are two fantastic, actually well-studied, proven to be effective, and actually compared to drug programs. And it's about a six-week program. They cost sort of $85 to $100 to run through, and they're very good. And as your person had mentioned, they go through all of the behavioral techniques that can be used and are effective in helping people sleep without medication.
Great stuff. Last question for you. We're going long here, and that's A-OK by me, if you're OK with it.
Yeah.
I have to ask you about the technology factor, because we have kids and our athletes, even our professional athletes. You know, they're on, they're texting, they're playing Candy Crush till the wee hours of the morning. These addictive things. A lot of research out there, and I guess maybe the common nomenclature is talking about, you know, the effects of the blue light and the blue light and the wavelengths of the light, which is probably true. But it's probably more, Dr. Samuels, about just being active and really, I guess, engaged while you're trying to get ready for sleep.
That's actually my line. You stole that.
I'm a thief. I'm a snake oil salesman and a thief today. Boy, oh boy, I'm really doing well. So
no, so that's actually my line. It's that while we know the light, so the wavelength of light emitted off the screen actually does block melatonin secretion. So we know that. That's a scientific proven fact. My feeling is that the interaction with the device probably is more of a factor. So I'm quite militant about telling people no screens after 8 p.m. and I'm extreme. My colleagues will say 1 to 2 hours before bedtime, but I just say that's it, 8 p.m. And because really we should be winding down, and that's really the issue, is that we're so tied to our technology that it's completely unnecessary, and it's absolutely a major factor now in affecting people's ability to get enough sleep, just the time, and then to achieve good stable sleep. This is actually, again, been well studied, and so we feel confident saying these things now, whereas 5 years ago I couldn't have said that as confidently.
Great stuff. Well, the research comes through. Dr. Samuels, if people want to get more information or maybe some help from all the good people down there at the Center for Sleep and Human Performance, how can they do that?
They can just go on to the website, which is www.centerforsleep.com, and all of the information is there, even referral forms, and people can self-refer. But there's a lot of information on the research and the athlete research as well, and I have the research assistant is always willing to answer questions, and she would be a good person actually to interview for specifically what we're doing with the teams, because she's in charge of that now.
Yeah, and we'll do that for sure, because this is such an important conversation. Well, I can't tell you how much fun we have with you. You're an all-time Crush favorite. There's no question about that. And
thanks,
we really appreciate your knowledge here today.
Okay, thank you.
Great, appreciate
it. Have a good night.
All right. Well, there you go. Dr. Charles Samuels from the Center for Sleep and Human Performance in Calgary. Listen, they're working with the Olympic athletes. They're consulting with organizations all over the world, businesses and in sport. Yes, they do work with NHL teams, Dwayne, for sure. It's a conversation we could probably carry on for 2 hours. But we got to cut out for a break. When we come back, we'll get to some of the great texts, and we'll also look at how we can wrap this up in terms of helping you perform better in anything you're doing. On Crush Performance, more right after this.
Radio Influence strives to bring you the best in digital media broadcasting. We have something for everyone. National sports radio talents like the Fabulous Sports Babe and Rich Herrera. Huge podcasts like Wrestling Soup and the MMA Insiders with Jason Floyd and Sam Kaplan. News and current event shows like Beyond the Badge with Vincent Hill. And shows that'll make you think like Dangerous Conversation with Scott Ledger. We've got you covered. You can find all our shows on iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, and RadioInfluence.com.
Crush Performance, your weekly source for sport performance and athletic development information. Each week, we look at the latest trends and research coming out of the performance world to keep you on the cutting edge and to find out what it takes to achieve human maximum performance. And athletes, now you can do just that as Crush Performance presents the Sport Matrix, the program for top performance in sport. For more information, go to crushperformance.com and join us Wednesday evenings at 7, Saturdays at 4. We're here to help you think like an athlete.
This is Crush Performance. If you have questions, comments, or smart remarks, write to us at crushperformance.com.
And welcome back to the show. Jeff Kershaw here as we continue our performance conversation. Just a great discussion with Dr. Charles Samuels, the medical director for the Center for Sleep and Human Performance, talking about what I think is probably the most important factor when it comes to human performance, not just in sport, but probably in every single thing we do, and that's sleep. It falls right into the category of rest and recovery. Right under that, we talk of nutrition. Below that is posture. That's the range of motion, the functional movement, the symmetry and balance, and that's the setup that your body has before it goes into action in sport. And then it's all about the movement, baby. The weight room, the training, the agility, the movement, the skill work is all about movement. But you got to take care of these important things. Some really great stuff that Dr. Samuels mentioned here in the last segment. The podcast will be posted here. You can listen to the show again on Saturday between 4 and 5. Do not use over-the-counter sleep aids unless you're under the direction of your doctor. If you're having problems sleeping, do not use sleep aids unless you're under the guise of your doctor. That's a strong message from Dr. Samuels there. You get into this wicked, wicked funnel that just doesn't end of going down with the sleep aids and then coming back up the next morning with the stimulants, whether it's caffeine or whatever you're using. We see it in sport all the time, and it is a deadly, deadly cycle. There's no question about it. There are strategies you can use to monitor and manage your sleep. And it's really important, you know, whether we talk about, you know, going to see the doctor, heck, call the guys down at the Center for Sleep for crying out loud, but check with your doctor for sure, because there's strategies. There's, again, as our texter mentioned, there's relaxation techniques. There's self-hypnosis. Okay. There's programming. There's organizing your sleep patterns in terms of your core sleep at night, how you nap, when you sleep in. These are the things we do with our athletes all the time. Mandatory naps. When we can sleep in on certain days, we definitely manage the sleep there. And the way we organize our sleep is not so much looking day to day, but we look at how much sleep our athletes need or a person needs in a block. I mean, adults need 8 to 9 hours of sleep. 7 is probably close to the minimum. We could probably get away with 6, but we'd like to say 7, 8, 9 hours of sleep, depending on the schedule. And we look at blocks of sleep over the course of 7 days. Do you get your sleep over the course of that block? And if you don't, well, then we have to make it up at some point. It's a great way to keep track of everything. And trust me, if you can get a hold of your sleep, if you're a person who's having problems with sleep, This is something you've got to address. And that's why I was so excited about this show today, because I've seen it turn professional sporting careers around. We use the sleep strategies for our professional teams and, of course, our Canadian teams, our national Olympic teams as well, when they start traveling across time zones, whether it's competing in Europe or competitions within the continent going from time zone to time zone. If we look at the NHL, the NBA, Major League Baseball is absolutely the worst, because of the number of games and the way the schedule is set up. But it is chronic sleep debt. And, you know, when we talk about the circadian rhythms of the body, it's just damaging. It's crazy. So a great conversation right there. I got to thank everybody for the text today. It was a fantastic text day, good and bad. Regardless of the snake oil guys, pathetic radio comments, you know, we're here to help people out. And I like some of the comments. The text question of the day was, what do you think is more important, the genetics or the environment we put our athletes in terms of performance? Crusher, I would say the genetics is more important than environment. I feel if an athlete has the physical attributes, then coaching and environment can take them to the next level. Love the show. Thanks, Greg. And I appreciate it. And there's a strong argument there. On the other side, from Trevor, Crusher, I think that environment is more important than genetics. Look at the pockets in the world that have created elite athletes. Runners come to mind in areas of the world. We could talk about Ethiopia or Jamaica, for example. You know, those countries in Africa are putting out endlessly the top distance runners. Jamaica is continually putting out the top sprinters. That's not a mistake. There's no question about it. And that is a great point as well on the other side of the coin. So Trevor and Greg, thank you for that so much. So again, there's different ways to go about it. When we look at genetics, look, athletes will self-select into sports that they are good at. That's how it works. So in the developmental ages, what we like to see is this period of sampling where athletes get to choose and gravitate towards the things they're good at. Look, right now, the dropout rates in developmental sport are at an all-time high. Between the ages of 12 and 15 years of age, the dropout rates are as high as 70% when you look at some of the research. Some of the Canadian research says between the ages of 12 to 15, the dropout rates are 35% per year. And there's lots of reasons for that. One, again, this comes back, I think, to the conversation of, you know, are we overscheduling? Are we trying to do too much with our time? Are kids just having fun out there? I mean, that's a big part of it. But also the point that, you know, are we putting kids in too many activities and not giving them enough time to recover? Because we're seeing the one of the number one reasons kids are dropping out is injuries and being hurt all the time. The other big one, of course, is being evaluated and constantly criticized. And one of the big ones, believe it or not, when it comes to, you know, looking at whether it's genetics or environment and why kids might be dropping out of sport and retention inside the sport, is the ride home with the parents. The criticism, that's one of the number one reasons. So all these things come into play. Great stuff. We'll be picking somebody from our text pool to win a oil change from Sherwood Park Dodge Chrysler Jeep. And we'll continue this discussion on human performance as we move in through the month. We've got to thank Dr. Charles Samuels, the medical director for the Center of Sleep and Human Performance. A fantastic conversation that we had today when it comes to overall performance. Really interesting talk on the shift work and, of course, law enforcement. And we thank you for that. And next week, we'll be talking more performance on Crush Performance. We'll see you then.